Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, happy Monday from the Press Box. As this week in baseball is still wrapping up to get out of here, he's giddy because the Stros got a sweep. Perfect baseball weather in Houston. He looks like he's copying Granato dressed for the golf course or the tennis court, but Charlie's on the way out. Nick's still here. I'm in, and that means for the next 3 hours, we have plenty to talk about.
How you doing, buddy?
How are you, man?
I'm doing pretty damn good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there. I know that the listeners are going to get a complete overview of what happened at Toyota Center on Saturday night from you.
Oh, so, yeah, UFC 262, but that's not the lead, brah.
Yeah, it is.
We know what the lead is.
I want to thank Bill Worrell, Gene Peterson, Jim Foley, Matt Bullard, Tim Frank, and Joel Blank.
How about it, baby? Rudy T with the shout-out at the Hall of Fame speech enshrinement. I love it, dude. I was so, so happy to see it. I didn't catch it live because I was obviously at the UFC fight.
Right.
But they have everything on YouTube. It's very accessible.
Right.
But I absolutely loved the shout-out. I mean, it was so cool to hear.
It was unexpected, to say the least. It almost got me again right there. You know, it was weird because it was one of those days where we had everything going on at the house. And Taylor wanted French fries. And I said, Daddy, I'll go get you some French fries. So I went out and I got food. I came back in. I looked at the clock and I was like, oh, Lisa, put on ESPN. I don't know. It's the Hall of Fame speeches. I don't know where we're at with them, but let's put them on. And Rudy was already at the podium.
Okay.
And I was like, damn, I missed it. So I was like fixing food for the girls. Lisa was setting the table. And he started talking about Carol Dawson. And, you know, even when we brought him up during the show, I was so glad because I talked to Carol once a month and Carol's health would not allow him to be there. And he was Rudy's right hand man. So when he mentioned Carol by name and some of the things he had said, I almost started tearing up because it brings back the memories. And it's not just about what everybody in Houston saw. It's about what they didn't see, the togetherness, the family, the tight knit that he was recognized as someone that was so close to him. And then I didn't think anything of it. And we all kind of sat down and he was going through the rest of his speech and I was really taken by a lot of it. And all of a sudden he starts rattling off the names and Taylor goes, Daddy, he just mentioned your name.
Oh, Taylor picked up on it.
She picked up on it, which meant a ton to me. And Lisa was like, oh my God, Joel, oh my God, oh my God, I got to rewind this. You heard that, right? And at that point, I was done.
So it was perfect. The fact that you know, Taylor asked for fries, it kind of worked out because he didn't mention the names, you know, with the broadcasters until I want to say the 6 or 7, maybe even the 8 minute mark.
He was into it, right?
Right. It wasn't like right off the top. So it was it was perfect timing for you.
I got it. And then, of course, my phone is just up. It's just bouncing off the table and everybody's sending messages. And Mario Ellie is calling me. And I'm trying to put the baby to bed, so I don't get it. And no one could have been more fired up than Mario Ellie. He's like, I'm sitting in front of T, and the minute he mentioned your name, he goes, I almost yelled F yeah. He's like, that's who T is because he took the time because of you, the trust he had with you, the love he had for you. And so his business manager, who also got mentioned, Jesse Brown, is like my big brother. And I called Jesse, and I didn't realize Jesse was there.
Oh, he was there.
And Jesse goes, I go, Jesse, I just want to let you know, because Jesse's taught me about a lot. He taught me a lot about life, about business. I worked with him and Rudy on a lot of different things. But Jesse was always my big brother. I'd take his, you know, when I was single, I would take his kids trick-or-treating. I would do, and I said, if I ever have kids, I want to be like you and Kathy as parents because you guys are the ultimate. So he picks up the phone. I don't realize he's at the Hall of Fame.
Right.
I go, bro, I'm just going to let you know right now, I hate you. And he's like, wait a minute, why? I go, man, for all the things that you did and showed me in your life, how the hell could you not tell me that as we get older, we're going to cry when certain things happen? And he goes, yeah, that's on me. He goes, I had complete waterfalls rolling throughout that entire speech. I go, you? And then he drops me out of the blue, and I'm just like, it's just like I'm watching my daughter get married or something like that. And I'm like, it caught me so off guard. He goes, I'm going to go give T a big hug for you. As soon as I see him, I go, please do. Tell him I love him to death. Tell him that was completely unnecessary, but he made my year.
Man, Rudy T, dude, like, you know, obviously didn't know him or get to know him like you did, but he's just a guy's guy. It's not just a player's coach. He's a regular dude among anybody. I don't think he sees himself as better or above anybody else. He always seems super humble. And the other thing about this speech, there's something about the way Rudy T says the word champion. It is like, you know, like just the way he says the word champion, just it just makes me feel like it's like he just has like a ringing tone to it that I absolutely appreciated. I didn't obviously, like I said, I was at the UFC fight and I didn't watch it live.
Yeah.
But to see it on Twitter, and I watched all the speeches on YouTube because I wanted to see what everybody, you know, had to say. I went back. The only one I really didn't catch, to be honest with you, was Tim Duncan's. I caught a portion of KG's. But no, Vanessa Bryant's for sure. Rudy T's for sure. I just didn't really catch too much of Tim Duncan's. But it was a super, super, super cool call out.
It really was. And like I said, that's more a reflection of who Rudy T, the person, is, to let people know that only saw him for coaching the Rockets in press conferences, right, interviews. That is the kind of person that Rudy is, and that's just how classy he is. But, you know, in takeaways from the Hall of Fame, too, like, for me, from Rudy's speech, I appreciate what he's trying to do for Robert Horry, but you know exactly where I stand on that.
Yep. We're in agreement. I know Charlie agrees with you as well.
If there's a role player Hall of Fame, Robert should be in it. But, you know, there's people out there on Twitter like White Magic saying, you know what, it's a prerequisite to get in the Hall of Fame. You have to have a ring. I said, so you're going to keep Stockton, Malone, Patrick Ewing.
Out of the Hall of Fame
because they don't have the ring. Charles Barkley out of the Hall of Fame. I go, that's just absolutely ludicrous.
No.
At the same time, just because you have seven of them, right place, right time, and you did your job and you played your role, and that's great. But if you average 9 points a game for your career, you don't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame.
Although I disagree with it, I love that Rudy did it.
Of course.
It shows how much of a player's coach and how much of a good dude he is. And he seemed very genuine when he said it.
I want to speak up for Robert Horry to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. He is truly a legendary player. He made so many clutch shots. He's got seven rings to prove it. This is where he belongs.
I think more so, again, that is a reflection on Rudy T because of his loyalty to his players, and also because so many coaches spoke up for him, he felt like, I'm going to pass the torch and speak up for someone else. Another class move. On the flip side of class moves, I bring you Kevin Garnett. Okay. Kevin Garnett, going into the Hall of Fame, had a chance to bury the hatchet with Ray Allen. Kevin Garnett still holds a grudge that he has publicly shown from time to time, as well as some of the other Celtics, because Ray decided to leave the Celtics to join the Heat.
Right.
He only did that because Rajon Rondo was such an a-hole to him and was trying to make his own star and his own big three that Ray said, if I have a choice to stay or leave, I'm going to go where I'm wanted, that I know I'm going to be a part of the offense. It had nothing to do with the other guys. And Ray, on multiple occasions, including when he went back and they were trying to show love, he went over to the bench to try and shake Kevin Garnett's hand, and Kevin Garnett wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So you have a chance here at the Hall of Fame. Bury the hatchet. Go forward. You guys are both Hall of Famers. You guys won a title together. And he chooses not only not to do that, but not to mention him at all. And I felt that was classless.
Oh, he didn't mention him. I thought you said he was going to. Chris Webber and Jalen Rose, they squashed their beef, right? Or did they not?
They have still yet to squash their beef.
Okay.
You know, there are guys that are already kind of on board to say let bygones but be bygones. I think that Kendrick Perkins and Paul Pierce would probably be on board for that. I don't think Rondo would be.
Well, I mean, look, if Ray Allen felt like he was going to be, you know, a part of the offense in Miami, why wouldn't he leave? Maybe there was something between, you know, them two that, you know, that we don't know about. I would imagine it's not the case. But if you're going to go to a team like Miami, where you know you're going to be included in the offense, and you get an opportunity to play with a guy like LeBron James. I mean, it's hard for me from the outside in, outside looking in, to say, you know what, that was a dumb move. But at the same time, there maybe there was some little internal, I don't know, little tiff between the two outside of that. But, you know, if Rondo was really trying to become that big three and that's what scared him away, hey, that's his right to make that decision. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I was really good friends with Ray at that time. I knew a lot of the stuff he was going through. I knew that a lot of times, having watched the games that he was playing in and then talking to him after games, it's like Ray Allen is like Rip Hamilton. You expend so much energy trying to run off screens to get open, and then Rondo would see you come off the screen wide open and selfishly just ignore you and go to do his own thing. And Ray's like, why would I stay? I mean, he goes, I'm trying to be the ultimate teammate. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to, you know, the public or otherwise. But if I have a chance to leave as opposed to continue to sign for 2, 3, 4 more years to endure this,
I'm not mad at him at all.
I'm not doing it.
Nope,
not at all. And he got another title out of it, too. So
if James Harden is sitting back and watching Rudy T's speech, what do you think he felt when Rudy T said this about Hakeem?
Hakeem, you more than anyone are responsible for me being here. You were the best player to ever wear a Houston Rockets jersey and one of the best of all time.
I think if I'm James Harden and I'm mature,
I don't think he does.
I tip my cap and I say, he's right. And he also played his whole career, with the exception of one throwaway season with Toronto, with the Houston Rockets. And he had plenty of times he could have bailed when he was the best player on the team, and he didn't. Now, selfish James Harden is probably going to say, the same way he wanted to bash Hall of Famer Kevin McHale because Kevin McHale didn't bow down to him, he'll probably have something to say along the way of, well, that's what Rudy thinks, but he didn't coach me. Or, you know, whatever the case may be. James is going to be James no matter what he is, but I think all rational Houston Rockets fans that have been here and done that for this many years will tell you the greatest Rocket of all time wore 34, and no one's going to ever argue that.
That's actually the one part. Speaking of Kevin McHale, I think that's the one part of KG's speech that I caught where he kind of like thanks Kevin McHale and then RIP Flip Saunders. But if you look at Kevin McHale, he didn't seem like, I don't know if it was the mask covering his face. He just didn't seem very appreciative of the shout out. I don't know.
He's not a real emotional guy, Nick, but
I know they squashed the situation because I saw it at Houston.
Yeah,
they happened here in Toyota Center. Yeah.
So McHale went out of his way and took the risk of drafting him, and they got really, really, really close. And then it got sideways because I think when he was traded, he didn't think McHale would ever trade him because they were buddies and all those things. When McHale's daughter passed away, it kind of shook Kevin Garnett up. And we all remember that night working that game where they still hadn't spoken when the Celtics were playing the Rockets. And all of a sudden, between the anthem and the start of the game, Kevin Garnett crossed half court, and they entered into an embrace and started crying, and we were like, thank God.
Yeah.
They squashed it.
Yeah, I mean, and I saw them interact behind, like in front of the visitor locker room as well.
Yeah.
So I thought that was super cool, and it was just an emotional moment, and I think it's cool that Kevin, you know, it's cool to see, even if it takes 10 years or 20 years, to see people squash stuff. I know you mentioned the fact that KG, I guess, made the decision not to squash it with Ray Allen. Yep. But hey, you know what? You know, maybe in another 5 or 10 years, maybe time heals all
wounds.
You hope
so, right?
You know what I mean?
You never know. Maybe they honor the Celtics, honor that championship team. Maybe everybody gets back in the same room. And you know, even Doc Rivers has tried to mend the fences. And he said this would be an opportunity to do it. And it didn't happen. So for whatever the case may be, that might be the greatest Hall of Fame class ever. And we can talk about the one that was named the next day, because if that one was the greatest, this one might be the least in terms of maybe very good players, but not Hall of Fame players. Ben Wallace, talk about on one end of the floor. He was a great defensive player, but I don't know that he's a Hall of Fame. But at the same time, that class was announced. We can get to that. The Astros with the big sweep of the Rangers, that's massive news. The Rockets finally put to bed the worst season in franchise history, pretty much, just by a win total column. And now we can talk about their potential first-round picks and where they go from here. But lots to talk about, including you guys getting involved in the conversation. 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. You can call that number. You can text that number. You can hit us up on Twitch. You can hit us up on Twitter. On Twitter, it is at the producer Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K. Together, we are the Press Box. This is ESPN 97.5.
And Joel Blank.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
I fell in love with basketball the first time I saw it. And as a young boy, I carved into my headboard of my bed, I love basketball. And I went to sleep with my hand on that carving, and I dreamed of one day getting to the NBA. After today, I can say that my life turned out better than my wildest dreams.
He got me many times with that speech. A name that I've mentioned to you on many occasions, Nick, Robert Barr, a guy behind the scenes that when you were just a fan of the Rockets during that time, you looked down and you kept thinking to yourself, who's that guy? What does he do? And then, again, if you realize the inner workings of the franchise, he was everything. He was the liaison between every coach and every player. He was the liaison between every other player in the league and possibly wanting to play for the Rockets or possibly dealing with league issues. Robert Barr was like the godfather for all of us, and the fact that he shouted him out, the fact that he looked to the sky and wished B.J. Johnson was there.
I saw that. That was, yeah.
After being at B.J.'s funeral this year and realizing, again, from the outside world, Brent Johnson's just a scout for the Rockets. Brent Johnson was a lifer, a lot like myself. Brent Johnson and I were hired the same time. And Brent Johnson left an indelible impact on the entire organization, and he was so close with Rudy. And again, when Mario called me from the hall and he said, it's about love, but more than that, it's about trust. And Rudy knew who he could trust, and you were one of his guys. And I said, so was BJ. So was so many guys that he mentioned, like Carroll Dawson. We had mentioned it when we interviewed him, and yeah. I wasn't sure because Carroll hadn't gotten his second shot, and he was really bummed that he wasn't going to be able to be there, and he was Rudy's big brother.
How the hell is Carroll? How did he not get the second shot?
And he's got a lot of health issues, too, and so travel and everything else might have been challenging, but he was still trying to, you know, get his second shot, and the fact that they talked previous to him going to the hall and for Rudy, of course, to give him the shout-out was just, there was so much that was amazing in that speech, but I think that as Rockets fans listening to this, that's what you take away.
Yeah.
You didn't have just a back-to-back championship caliber organization and team. What you had was the ultimate team.
It was a family. Culture. It was a family.
Yeah, it was a culture. Family. It
a good
was
culture.
A togetherness yeah. that will no one will ever take away from any of us.
Yeah, and Rudy T, you know, you need all that to be intertwined through one person or very few people in the organization. And obviously, Rudy T was that guy. The fact that he was cool with so many people on so many different levels. I mean, I could tell. I would totally love working for or with like Rudy T, because that guy is just so damn likable. I feel like he's so fair with his approach, and it was just cool. I watched that speech in its entirety, not live, unfortunately. Like right, I said, right, I was right, watching right. You know, UFC 262 at Toyota Center, but it was super, super cool to watch. And the other thing, and the Vanessa Bryant speech, I watched that in its entirety as well. I'd like to start off by saying Vanessa's an absolute soldier for going through that. I think she got emotional maybe once, twice, but even when she did, she kind of held it together. Mm-hmm. But this is probably the most touching clip for me that I pulled from the entire. There's plenty to go back and listen to, but I love the way she said this.
He gave this game his all. Kobe played through injury after injury. To name a few, he had IVs administered during halftimes to play through food poisoning and the flu. He played with a broken nose. He had a broken finger and had it snapped back in place just enough to finish the game. He also taught himself how to use his left hand to play the rest of the season while his finger healed. He even swished 2 free throws with a torn Achilles and walked off the court on his own.
I mean, the way she delivered that.
And I'll take it a step further, Nick, and this is where I hope LeBron James and load management players were listening. When she spoke about how she wanted him to take a night off every now and then, and he refused to do it. And when she asked why, he said, because those fans that are sitting in the 300 level that saved all month just to get a ticket so they could come see me play, if I don't play and they don't see me play and they have that disappointment, he didn't want to deal with that. He wanted to make sure if they came to see me play, I was going to play and not let them down. Amazing, amazing stuff. That's what I hope LeBron, for as much as he wants to be a Laker legend and he wants to be accepted in the culture, learn from that.
Yeah, and it's, you look, I mean, he was still pretty much a part of the modern era in which he never changed teams. And there's something to be said about that. Maybe as a little, you know, getting older now, old schoolers, we appreciate that dude that stayed with one team. Even if he didn't win a championship, the guy that just stayed loyal, people appreciate loyalty regardless of the situation. And so the fact that he's a Laker for life, I mean, that's just, that in itself is absolutely amazing. The fact that he got through that little tiff with Shaquille O'Neal and then went on to win championships, and they got a decent, you know, replacement in Pau Gasol. He was a great player. But the fact that he was able to do that with him being the man, I think that was so solidifying for Kobe's career. And I just think it was super cool for Vanessa to be able to do that and be strong. I thought the whole thing was cool. I don't know if I would have watched it live, but because of the Rudy T thing, if the fight didn't happen, I probably would have watched it live specifically for Rudy T's part. But even the Vanessa Bryant, like I said, that was really, really cool. And some of the other speeches as well was really cool. So just a cool weekend overall and so much to talk about, man.
Yeah, definitely. No doubt about that. So, and then the last thing on the hall, though, Nick, which I still think is very weird. Why is it that, like, so if you're going in the Hall of Fame and you ask me to, what do they call it? It's not represent you. But you ask
introduce
me.
Introduce you?
Or yeah, what? To be. I would think that you would go, that I would go up first and speak about you before, like, I turn the podium over to you to get honored. Otherwise, I don't understand the purpose of the people that are inducting you or whatever it's called, because to see Michael Jordan just stand there with his head down with Vanessa Bryant the whole time and maybe look up and react to some of the things she said. I wanted Michael to talk about that big brother, little brother thing. I wanted to talk about how it was so competitive, even though it was brotherly.
Yeah, I mean, I could have listened to Calvin Murphy speak. I honestly didn't expect Hakeem to, but I could have heard Calvin Murphy speak as well. You mentioned Michael Jordan. But look, them just being there, I guess, was enough. But I don't know who made that decision to not let them speak. But yeah, I would have loved to hear.
Presenters. That's what
presenters. That's what it was.
Yep.
I would have loved to hear Murphy present Rudy T or even Hakeem and Murphy doing it together in a tandem on the stage into a mic and speaking and just letting everybody know how much they appreciate him before, you know, actually getting him to the podium. But that's just the approach that they decided to take, man. So, but it was a really, really good event, and there was so much to take from that. And again, how about Joel Blank? For those of you just tuning in, getting a shout out.
I want to thank Bill Worrell, Gene Peterson, Jim Foley, Matt Bullard, Tim Frank, and Joel Blank.
Those other guys are pretty classy guys, too. Mr. Worrell, to go out with a win on Saturday night was pretty darn cool. The fact that Steven Silas, who really being a newcomer to the organization, didn't have to do what he did, and it was his idea to contact the Perry Furman, the producer for AT&T Sportsnet, and say, if we win, I want to give Bill Worrell the game ball. And then to be able to do a post-game interview and tell him that was pretty damn special.
The whole thing was cool. The whole thing was cool, man.
Yep, no doubt. So there's a little basketball to start the show. Yeah, the Rockets won against the Clippers. Yeah, they lost against the Hawks. The great thing is the season's over, and they did what they had to do to at least give themselves a shot at getting one of the top four picks. We can break down those picks or what they could be and should be and maybe would be, depending on the circumstances as we get on with the program. But lots of other things to get into as well. The silver boot looks like At least the shoe fits so far if you're a Houston Astros fan. After the sweep of the Rangers, the offense is clicking, and now it needs to be because they're heading out west to take on the A's starting tomorrow night. But good things to talk about from Minute Maid Park. The playoff picture is starting to shape up in the NBA. Maybe even some NFL news as some of the voluntary mini camps went on this weekend. Lots to get to. It always includes you. Give us a call. Give us a text. Give us a tweet. Give us a Twitch. We're here for you. It's the Press Box, ESPN.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back half hour into the program, responding to some of the people responding to us as we get things rolling here on The Press Box on a Monday. People banging on the speeches, saying too much focus on the teleprompter.
I mean, it's
you ever tried that?
Dude, it's a
nerve. You ever tried to get up in front of thousands of people knowing millions are watching and try and just wing it and think that you should be criticized for using a teleprompter?
Yeah.
You understand the weight of the world that was on Vanessa Bryant's shoulders in trying to speak for her husband who's no longer with us and feeling the raw emotions of, again, having to deal with the fact he's gone? He would have loved to have been there. He deserved to be there. And then everybody reacting to it, and everybody was going to critique it like you. I'm never going to criticize people for using a teleprompter.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nervous moment in itself, let alone a nervous moment speaking at the Hall of Fame and talking about your husband who passed away at 41 years of age in a very, very tragic accident. Are you telling me that you're going to just sit there and criticize the speech? It's just stupid. People are lame. That's why the text line is about to get absolute buried for me, because it's just absolutely, people are just absolutely delusional.
And
on that
some people
line.
Have the gift of being able to deliver speech without a teleprompter and some don't. But I'm going to call out the same number who keeps trying and keeps texting about the issue, saying, was Jim Valvano, Lou Gehrig, President Kennedy, or Patton reading off a teleprompter? Well, if they would have had one, some might have. But I can assure you Jim Valvano was, because at one point during his speech, he calls out the teleprompter for saying, you have to wrap it up, saying, do you think I'm really going to wrap it up when this might be the last speech of my life and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So he definitely was using the teleprompter. Now, he might not have been reading it word for word,
but he was using it
as an outline.
Yeah.
So, again, if you've been there, done that, and you're a superhero and you're a great speaker, good for you. But not everybody is, and I'm not going to fault anybody for using one.
No. And, I mean, she's strong enough on her own just to be able to walk up there. And then you have to remember, not only does she have to go through that speech and try to hold her emotions together as much as she can, every other person that went up to that podium mentioned Kobe in some way, some shape or form. Like almost every person that went up to that podium had some sort of experience or shout out Kobe. And every time they would put almost every time they would put the camera on Vanessa Bryant, and she would absolutely love it. She would have to hold her emotion in each and every single time, even when Rudy T gave his shout out to Kobe Bryant. They put the camera on Vanessa Bryant. She was very appreciative and thankful. I'm pretty sure emotions started riling up again. So she had to control her emotions in multiple moments at that place, not just on the podium when she was speaking. So I think she deserves a little bit more credit than that. But yeah, I mean, all in all, the Hall of Fame thing was super cool. And I was glad to catch a lot of it on YouTube when I was able to get back home. So
no doubt. And here's the other thing, Nick, and Todd, the show mentions this. He's spot on too. She didn't just lose a husband. She lost her daughter.
Yeah.
So the fact that all those memories come flooding back while she's up there, and it's not her forte. No one ever said that Vanessa Bryant was someday going to be a spokesperson or a public speaker.
Yeah.
And the only reason why she was doing it is because she had to, because her husband was killed and her daughter was killed. So I think that you take those things into consideration before you spout off. And someone said, you know what? You can't rag on someone just because you can't read, therefore you can't use a teleprompter. I'm not going to go that far as someone else on text. But the fact is, unless you've been in those shoes, don't go banging on them for that. That's something that I'm not going to pull out of the woodwork because I don't think that's right.
Yeah, it's just lame, dude. I don't know what people are.
And someone said, I had trouble with my best man speech. See, there and again, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. When there's so much emotion circling inside of you, teleprompter is a godsend. And you don't think presidents of the United States, on almost every speech they make, if you see that that glass square that's just sitting to the right and left of the podium, and you're always wondering, what's that? From the backside, it looks like a piece of glass. On the front side, it's a teleprompter with the entire speech. So
yeah,
understand these things before you spout off on things like that. Just saying.
Just saying. How about the Astros getting that sweep, dog?
Yeah, I think one thing, Nick, was in the immortal words yesterday of TLC, no, we don't need no scrubs.
I knew you were going to say that.
And the other thing that I noticed, and I don't know if you did or not, in the post game, I was watching on AT&T Sportsnet when they did the post game press conference, and they were talking to McCullers, who again has been stellar. It's a shame he didn't get the win. But the way he pitched against Ohtani, the way he's pitched in his last four outings, where he's got a sub-2 ERA, I think it's like 1.81, and he's been absolutely fantastic. Someone had to just poke the bear and not just say, hey, Dusty said it took you a while to get your bleep together and figure it out. But at least at the end, you get, and he just, you could see he was really irritated. And yeah, he went, I don't think anybody's going to argue with 6 innings or 7 innings of shutout baseball. So I'll just leave it at that. And good for him for saying it like that. You just hope he doesn't go back and go, hey, Dusty, what the hell was that about? But whoever was trying to stir the pot, when your team's rolling and you're the hottest team in baseball, media members, now's not the time.
Yeah, because also it just creates a division in a team that you don't need. Now, obviously, if you're a media member, it really doesn't matter, right? You're not in the clubhouse. You're not a part of that culture. But he just didn't want to let anything divide that team. You know, that reminds me of Russell Westbrook when someone was asking Steve Adams a question and Russell Westbrook jumped in and said, you're not going to divide this team. That's kind of a similar situation, and I appreciate that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But yeah, scrub. How about that? But no, but you know what? And the other thing is, I think they should have left him in before we move on from McCullers.
Sure.
He didn't break 100 pitches. Like, why doesn't Dusty just let him in?
Well, but I think one thing you got to take into consideration, Nick, was early in the season when his pitch count was up, it wasn't just that his pitch count got up early in games and they stuck it out till 80, 90 pitches in. Yeah. It affected his next start. Then his next start, it looked like his arm was still not completely where it needed to be.
So it's a
bit
on the safe
side. And I
think
they were probably cognizant of that, going, look, he's been on such a roll, and we need him right now in a stretch where he's going to face Oakland, especially possibly Oakland and other teams, as now they're in first place. I think they were careful to say, let's not overdo it with him because he's pitching so well. The starters, for the most part, were fantastic all weekend again. The bullpen is where, of course, we still have issues and question marks. Even Miles Straw showed that he has signs. And someone said this, Klopp said it on Twitter, and I agree with this on Twitch. I mean, he showed he could be the fourth outfielder. As I said, just like I'm not telling them to get rid of Kyle Tucker, and he's been hot lately too.
Yeah.
Kyle Tucker ain't going anywhere, and he's staying in right field. No matter what he does, he's better than Reddick. But Miles Straw should be your utility backup outfielder, and I'm fine with it. As a starting center fielder in Major League Baseball, I'm not.
Yeah, and eventually, hopefully, I think they understand that, and hopefully they'll get to that point. The reality is they have to find someone better before they move on from Miles Straw in that position. It's just that simple. Until they find that depth or that extra depth or that extra player that's willing to come over here and take that spot, Miles Straw is your guy for the meantime. Look, if the bats are working right now, Yuli's doing really good. I think he has a better batting average than Alvarez. That's really good. Altuve's playing well right now. So if the bats are doing really, really well right now, that can, you know, alleviate some of the pain that you feel from Miles Straw. But that it has to be consistent. And we don't know that the bats are going to be this consistent. We just know that they're playing well right now.
But you know what else it eliminates, Nick? It eliminates a lot of the off-the-field banter amongst fan bases. Because when you look at it, everybody that wants to make the argument that they cheated, everybody wants to make the argument that they used the garbage cans to their advantage. No one can make the argument this year. There is no cheating. There's no garbage can banging. There's no monitors. There's no nothing. And if you look, what you and I talked about this last week, even before the great showing this weekend, you go 1 through 6 in the Astros lineup, you put it up against 1 through 6 in any other lineup in baseball, and you're going to find out everybody's playing for second. From the run differential to the averages of the top six to the way that these guys are scoring. And this is taking into consideration, especially in this last series, how many times they left runners in scoring position. Heck, I think it was Friday night. They were 2 for 18. Or Thursday night, they were 2 for 18 with runners in scoring position. And they overcame all of those things and continue to win baseball games. You can say all you want about 2017. You can say all you want about the past. You can pick on Altuve and think somehow in some conspiracy theory there was a buzzer. But guess what? The buzzer is the one that's ringing in your head going, you got nothing now because this team is pretty damn awesome offensively.
And the reality, most of the people in the country know that. They know Altuve's a fantastic hitter. He's been an amazing and a phenomenal hitter for most of his career. But it doesn't stop them from trolling. I mean, everybody knows the Astros didn't need to cheat. They got caught cheating and now They're the butt of a massive, massive cheating joke, if you will, for lack of a better term, and the fact that everybody's killing them. But look, Jose Altuve, I think he proved before and after that that he's still a phenomenal hitter. And so it doesn't – I don't understand the love for all these fan bases, particularly New York, to do that. But if they want to do that, hey, you paid for the ticket for the most part. You can say whatever you want for the most part. Not everything can be said, but for the most part. And honestly – the Astros, like I said before, in a way have to deal with it anyway, because it's really hard to kind of get all these ushers and security guards and everybody else to enforce, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18, right. 30, 40,000 people from saying bad words. It's just a hard thing to enforce and regulate. So in a lot of ways, the Astros just have to deal with what's coming. But at the end of the day, they sweep the Rangers, their bats are kicking ass, and that's all that matters for the Houston Astros right now.
I mean, I agree with you 100%, Nick. And here's the other thing. And 346 brings this up on text message, too. And they're absolutely correct as well. When you talked about the fact that they knew when to swing, not to swing. Well, guess what? Again, no aid involved in all of this. They have the best eye at the plate. They have the best two-strike eye at the plate. They have the least amounts of swings and misses. They're making the most contact. And then again, when you look at the run differential and everybody's playing for second, and it went up all weekend with the sweep and how and the lead and the way they won these games, that you look at it and you're like, hey, that argument's gone. Hey, swing and a miss. Try again. New sign, new tweet, new Yankee BS. Because guess what? This team, though they started out 5-1, they already had a downward spin. You remember when the Major League Baseball made them play with five guys out of their starting lineup when everybody else got to postpone a lot of games. They endured that with basically minor league talent at five different spots in the batting order and took their lumps. But you know what they did? They showed resiliency. They bounced back. They didn't complain. They didn't pull the Aaron Judge. They didn't pull the Garrett Cole of, well, we talked about it as a team. We really didn't think we should play, but at the end of the day, we decided we're going to go out there and give it a shot. Shut the hell up. Because that wasn't the sympathy theory of the Astros. They went out and said, hey, it is what it is. We got to play. They played in Colorado when it was 27 freaking degrees outside and lost two games. They got swept by the Tigers. But you know what they did? They bounced back. They're in first place now. They're the hottest team in baseball. Give them some respect.
I absolutely agree with you, man. I absolutely agree with you. We'll talk more baseball. I think there's no. I want to get into some to a comment made by Joe Girardi, and then obviously,
yeah.
Dude, it's the NBA playoffs,
yep.
And guess what? We're talking about it, man, because there's a lot of angles that I want to talk
ever
about.
I think we should do that again, Nick. We never need to shy away from talking basketball.
I don't think so either.
You know, but some people thought, if they don't
you're
like
right.
It,
sometimes I feel like I have to justify it, and I shouldn't have to. But it's just, dude. There's going to be some games in this play-in tournament. It's going to be a lot better than I expected. There's a bunch of storylines that I want to talk about.
But who's
about.
Your MVP? Because there's an argument to be made with that late season run, including yesterday with 46 points from Steph Curry,
yep.
That as good as Jokic has been, Steph Curry might have been better.
LeBron endorsed them.
Yeah. So we've got lots to talk about on the basketball front. Baseball, football, you name it, we got it. Nick's going to break down everything UFC at the Toyota Center this weekend. So we've got lots to get to, lots to look forward to, and it all involves you. So stick right where you are. It's the Press Box on ESPN.
When it comes to sports betting, SportsMapBets.com is the site you need. From weekly betting guides to single game breakdowns of the point spread, money line, over under, and more, SportsMapBets has all the info you need to make the best play. SportsMapBets.com. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
So, I'm not screaming. Someone said on text I'm screaming. I'm really not. And I don't know. I asked Nick. I said, you can be honest with me if I am. But normally you know when I'm screaming.
No, I said your voice projects, but yeah. I wouldn't constitute that as screaming. But yeah, man, I want to talk a little bit about this play-in tournament. 7 versus 8, 9 versus 10 in each of the conferences. And here's my deal. And you can disagree, poop on it, whatever. Okay. I kind of want the Lakers to lose. Because Who do you want to see advance more in the NBA playoffs right now, the Phoenix Suns or the Utah Jazz? My vote would be the Phoenix Suns. I just don't want the Utah Jazz to play. Now, if the Lakers lose, right, they obviously have one more opportunity to get that eight spot. I would assume they would win, get that eight spot, and then they would have to face the Utah Jazz as opposed to the Phoenix Suns. In the event that they do beat the Golden State Warriors, they become the seventh spot and have to face the Phoenix Suns. I would rather see Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and company advance more. So in a way, I kind of want the Lakers to lose because I believe they'll eventually get into the real playoff anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't know if that's going to happen. Steph Curry obviously is playing his ass off, and he's doing really, really well in the absence of Klay Thompson. But don't get it twisted. Like, the last thing, who would you rather see get bounced in the first round, the Suns or the Jazz? I'd rather see the Jazz.
I agree with you because I've told you all along, I always anticipate they're going to do that anyway. But at the same time, when I look at it, I say it wouldn't be as much as I'm with you because I enjoy watching the Suns play and I really like those guys. I could see the Suns bowing out and going, look, it's a progression. Last year they had the best record in the bubble, but they didn't get in. This year they got in, but they lost in the first round. Next year should be an even better year, and right. People would just be like, okay. But there's a couple things. One, strategically, and I don't know how many people caught this, Nick, but the Clippers did a classic tank job over the last two games.
Oh, without a doubt. There's no doubt.
The fact that they lost to the Rockets, they lost yesterday, and they subtly just slid right into a 4-5 matchup that suits them a lot better.
Weak sauce.
Yeah, than what they could have had. And they wanted no part, as much as they were talking tough, they wanted no part of a Lakers first round matchup
no
either.
No question. They can talk as tough as they want. They didn't want to face them.
I think that, look, as much as people kibosh the league's thinking on this play-in tournament, and I've even said, and you and I've talked about this, in terms of you play all the games in the schedule to solidify a playoff spot. The fact that you could let that slip away by not playing great for two games or one game is kind of a travesty. But at the same time, the reason why the league did is exactly this. The first game for the Western Conference, one of the first games, Steph Curry versus the Lakers. Amazing. Exactly what the league wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, if nothing else in the other three matchups is compelling to you, the fact that you get that right off the top.
And they're both probably going to make the playoffs
exactly. Anyway.
And so that's why it's
going home.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
All likelihood, both teams. I think I saw the BPI on ESPN. I believe Warriors were 85%, and I think the Lakers were slightly higher, or maybe in the lower 90 percentile range. But they're probably both going to make it to the playoffs anyway. This is why the playoff. And at first, actually, out last week, I was criticizing the play-in tournament. But now that it fell the way that it did, look, if the Lakers lose, number one, it's going to be a huge storyline that LeBron and Anthony Davis, who I both know had some ankle issues, but hopefully they'll be okay, both are in the series or in the game, and then they end up losing to the Golden State Warriors. That will be talked about forever. The Lakers will obviously have a chip on their shoulder going in to make sure that they secure that eight spot. I would assume that they're going to win that game. And then they're still in the playoffs, and you still have LeBron, you still have Anthony Davis, and you still have the stars that you won in the Western Conference in the real playoffs. So it worked out for the NBA in terms of the play-in tournament, in my opinion, because
I agree.
You get the Warriors, you get the Lakers, and they're both probably going to be in there. And it's gonna put a chip on the shoulder of the team that loses.
And look, the matchups, I mean, you got the possibility now, not just in the play-in, but you have the possibility of some pretty serious upsets when you start looking at matchups. Because the Clippers got what they wanted. But you know what? Fans do too. They get a rematch of that Clippers-Dallas series in the bubble last year with Luka hitting the big shots late in those games.
Yeah.
With the Clippers folding up their tents after having a lead. So that's a great matchup. But you look at like Denver. As good as they played down the stretch just to get a top four seed, yeah, even though they lost Jamal Murray. Denver's got their hands full with Portland because Portland's full strength. And
I
guess what?
Portland's
Murray is
that
a guard. Team. And guess where he's not playing? And that means that Lillard and CJ McCollum are going to have an advantage.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal. Miami playing the Bucks. You know, I've said all along, I'm from Milwaukee. They're done. I don't think they're as good as the top teams in the East, and I don't think that they're going to win the title, let alone compete in the East. Miami did it last year. They have the ability to do it again this year because Jimmy Butler's going to be healthy. They're going to get all their guys just like they did last year.
They have more playoff experience, too. That's the thing about Miami that scares them. Now, going back to the Portland situation, CJ McCollum is playing his ass off.
Yep.
The only issue that scares me about that, Joel, is the hamstring. And if that hamstring sneaks up on him, or if it gets aggravated during the series, that kills Portland. If McCollum's hamstring is okay, I think the Blazers take care of business in that series as long as CJ McCollum is healthy. And I like the attitude that Dame has. He said after the game, look, we're not going to go in there thinking we can't win. We're going to go in there thinking we can win. And that's the mentality that you absolutely have. But, you know, I think it's really, really dependent on whether or not C.J. McCollum gets through that hamstring. He's got that little hamstring tape that he's got on the back of his leg. I don't know if it's helping, but hopefully it does. The other thing in the West that I want to get to, why was Anthony Davis and LeBron James still playing after
completely
they rolled
agree.
Their
ankle?
What completely the hell were agree. They doing?
The fact that they were in a game that New Orleans was out of, they had no business winning. It was a 10-point or a double-digit lead, and the fact that they were still playing. And LeBron, though, I do think he milked it a little bit, because even on the replay, I never saw him roll it, but his ankle got dinged up again.
It looked like his ankle got hit as opposed to...
Right.
But on the broadcast, they said he stepped on somebody's foot. I just didn't see that in the replay. But maybe it looked like he just got hit. But he did genuinely look scared on his back. Under the goal, he's like, oh my God, is it hurt? And then I think once he took that first step on it, I think it calmed him down. Because if you looked at the game later in the broadcast, maybe 3-4 minutes later, you saw him joking and smiling about 3 or 4 minutes after that injury, which is a massive sign. Now, the Anthony Davis one, I was like, okay, you could see where his ankle kind of rolled and then I'm like, nope, get this guy out. He needs to be in the game. Do not do this. But they left him in, and I would imagine both players were getting their ankles treated a whole lot after that game.
Because, again, they've put themselves in this position, so now there's no wiggle room. I mean, one injury now or one re-injury.
It's done.
And really, they are. They're probably going to be done. And as good as the Nets are playing on the other side, you know anything can happen now that we're in playoff time. And so, therefore, they chose to play the regular season like they did, with a lot of guys resting, maybe too long, and now a lot of guys trying to get back in shape and maybe not enough time. But that's their issue to deal with, and we'll see. Because like I said, the standings are phenomenal when you start looking at some of these matchups and you start thinking about the fact that, you know what, if you're the Lakers, as bad as it may be to have to go through the play-in, and even the Warriors, as long as you end up in 7 or 8,
you're fine.
You got a fighting chance against either one of those teams. Because the Blazers are actually the anti-Jazz. The Blazers are a team that comes in very poorly rated, but can go a long way. Whereas the Jazz, no matter how good they are in the regular season, you know somehow, some way, they're going to find a way to blow it in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The Suns, because they're new, because they're young, because they're fresh, with the exception of Chris Paul, they've done enough to make their fan base happy already, but they don't scare the Lakers. They don't scare the Warriors, because the Warriors' championship mentality says, we just do us and execute, and we got a guy that shoots the way Steph does. We got a chance.
Yeah, you got a chance with Steph. I mean, this dude is coming off his second scoring title, the second oldest player, I think, to get a scoring title behind Michael Jordan, who did it at the age of 35. If I'm not mistaken, I think MJ has 10 scoring titles. But the fact that he did it at 33 years of age, and the way he needs to move to be successful, the way he has to create space, he works his ass off for just one shot. For just one shot, this guy is trying to do anything he can to create for that one shot. And when he does, the degree of difficulty doesn't go down, and he still makes it. So when you got Steph playing his ass off right now, man, that performance that he put – and you know what he said after the game? He's like, I should have shot the ball better. You know, as crazy as it sounds,
yeah,
I should have shot
40,
the better.
46.
Yeah, and he had 46 points. So the guy obviously has a high standard, so he's going to bring it. I don't think he's scared of the Suns. I don't think he's scared of a lot of teams.
His pedigree and his experience says he'll take all comers and give them a ball game regardless. And even if you double-team him, you know, that means that guys like Andrew Wiggins, even a Draymond Green, the guys that they have, even a Oubre if he's good to go, you have guys that are at least capable of scoring, especially when the numbers on the floor advantage Warriors. If two are on Steph, that means you're going 4 against 3 the rest of the way. Chances are pretty good you're going to get good looks.
I mean, does Draymond sound like a guy that's nervous?
People are talking about, you guys are so small and Valanciunas was going to take advantage of his size, which he did a good job. But are you guys almost enjoying?
I'm a motherfucking dog. Straight like that. I don't know how else to tell you. People have been going at me for years with centers. They've been going at Loon for years. That shit ain't worked yet. We dogs, so keep trying it.
I mean, you're talking about a team that has no lack of confidence at all. So they're not scared of anybody, in my opinion. So I don't think they're going to be the team to beat, but they could be. They have a fighting chance. Again, you mentioned the scoring title and with Steph Curry and the fact that he's playing his ass off. That team is not nervous. That team is not scared. They've been there. And even without Klay Thompson, they are absolutely not scared
at all. On the flip side of the West, though, now when you look at the East, it is very much set up for the top teams. Because even the top four, the top five teams, when four plays five and the Knicks play the Hawks, no matter who wins there, they're not going any further. And they don't scare anybody. And when you look at the bottom half of the draw, the Celtics, they've shut down Jaylen Brown for the year. Jason Tatum said he's still not 100%. So no matter who the Celtics play, if they get through the play-in, they don't scare anybody. The Sixers and the Nets should walk through until the semifinals. And the Bucks got, like I said, right off the top, the Bucks got their hands full already with the Heat. So there's good matchups abound, but we're talking playoff basketball now, and now it's where it really gets fun.
Oh, no doubt, dude. I was going, there was two things I was really looking forward to. Normally it would be the UFC, because you know I'm an MMA guy.
Yeah.
But number one was the Rudy T speech shouting you out 100%. And it was my idea to play that, by the way. I saw your little tweet. And then obviously this, because I wanted to talk about the NBA playoffs. This is the time. I mean, this is the time to do it. There's some storylines. I know a lot of people are turned off by the NBA because of, I guess, the messages on the broadcast or whatever.
Right.
But, man, just look at the game for what it is. Just the pure basketball nature of it. There's talent. And there's a lot of fun games.
This is a great time. Now we're looking forward to this because now we got a whole couple months of playoff NBA basketball to go along with the Astros playing well. You've got all the season within expectations in terms of the Texans and all the teams in the NFL getting ready to play. So it's a good time to be a sports fan. It's a good time, dare I say it, to be a Houston sports fan because the Astros are in first place. And the NBA playoffs, at least we can watch those. I don't know if you're pulling for a James Harden or you're pulling for a Chris Paul or you're hoping that all of them fall on their face because they're not the Rockets and they're not here anymore. But there's lots to get into there. By the way, Damon Lillard called out a guy who said at the start of the year, you got to win 42 games or I'm going to lose my house. He actually wanted to see the ticket. The guy was hemming and hawing. He's like, okay. So there you got to be careful that even the guys that you think aren't listening on Twitter, keep tabs, follow up, and we'll call you out. And you're going to get killed if you don't show up at the end of the deal like you did at the start. So that was funny. But we'll be talking basketball throughout, so we'll have some fun. Hopefully along the way, we're going to get Charles Barkley on. We're going to get Kevin McHale on. We'll get other people talking about basketball as well. And we need to talk about, at some point, the marvelous Marv Albert, who has also joined the Chris Webber, although I think this one was Marv's choice as opposed to C. Webb, in saying after this year's Eastern Conference playoffs, he's going to bow out. So we've got lots to get your commentary on. 1 hour in the books, two to go. Second hour of the show comes up next. It's the Press Box, ESPN.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.